you'll notice a harshness to this. You know, no, you don't have to listen through the theme music, the opening, the introduction. I just made it. I'm archiving now. Previously, I was not archiving. Now I'm archiving. And I'm just going to knock stuff out. But I'm going to segregate this into a different area, I think. I may call this the cold beer archive. Because I'm drinking cold beer, baby. I ain't going to lie to you. And when I drink cold beer, well, I'm going to stick it somewhere else. Y'all didn't want me to pretend like I don't drink cold beer now, did you? But, like I said, if I'm going to sit in front of this damn computer, I'm going to have RFM rocking and rolling here. And I'll be damned if there's not a big development in the Edgar Steele case. Man, this thing just gets more and more interesting. I Googled Edgar J. Steele for news stories. Oh, yeah, by the way, the babe who's covering the story out there in Idaho called me back today. And she said she was declining the opportunity to appear on Radio Free. She was declining the opportunity to appear on Radio Free Mississippi. I noticed a hit from Idaho. I guess she don't like my editorial position. Or hell, maybe she just don't like my, website. More likely she don't like my editorial position, though. Don't you know? And also, let me knock out something else. I'm getting some phone calls from a party that appears to be well-meaning, and you're asking me to something about a conference, Christian identity in a conference. No disrespect, but I don't communicate with people I don't know via the telephone initially. That's not the way I talk with people initially. If you want to introduce yourself to me, somebody's calling right now. This is the same party. This is Jim Giles.
Hey, Jim.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yep. And we're on the air right now.
Okay. Yeah. Just as Buck, I just wanted to give you a call. We do a conference show with a lot of Christian identity people, and just wanted to invite you to one of our conferences. My dad was a Marine, just like you were. And
no, I've never served in the military, but thank you for that compliment.
Yeah.
It's good It's good to finally talk with you. I'm sorry for all the confusion.
I apologize. I apologize as well. All I can tell you is that, there's a lot of people here in America that love Jesus Christ. And, I have to admit that I was a Zionist big time in my life. I thought that the Jews were God's chosen people because that's what my, the Baptist church that I went to told me. And, it took working on Wall Street as a broker, for 10 years, I worked in investment banking. I worked for Morgan Stanley and some other big investment banks. And, working with those companies, you come to the conclusion, if you really are a son of God and you're born again, you come to the conclusion that there's no way that these Canaanites, could possibly be God's chosen people. Jesus was not a Jew. He was not a Canaanite. He was an Israelite, just like all the European people are. I think maybe the best way to call it is that white people are Jacobites. They become Israelites when they believe in Jesus Christ as their Savior.
I've heard that Jacobites term before. I can't recall who said it, but I've
Jacobites
heard.
Jacobites are people that are genetically descendants of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. But an Israelite is somebody who actually believes in God and believes in his son, Jesus Christ. They become an Israelite by faith. If they're white, if they're Adamic, they are genetically, part of the, they're part of the chosen, people. But it takes, you're not saved just by your race. You're saved, more importantly, you're saved by grace. You're saved by what Jesus Christ did on the cross for you. When he suffered on the cross and he bled on the cross, he washed away all of our sins. And when he rose again, we have newness in life. So I was going to ask you, I heard you went to the Sorbonne.
Yeah, I did. But let me tell you, let me just comment how refreshing it is to hear another voice other than mine. I've grown tired of my voice.
Okay.
No, so it's nice to hear somebody else. This is a new aspect of Radio Free Mississippi. You, in point of fact, I've had a couple of other callers, but in terms of that's not been an emphasis of mine, but it's something I'm kind of leaning more and more toward as I sit around in the evening, just kind of bored in front of my computer. So I say, well, heck, I might as well crank up, my internet radio broadcast. I studied French at the Sorbonne for two semesters, in the fall and in the spring. That would have been, 82, and then the fall of 82 and the spring of 83 in Paris. Best year of my life, easily.
Mm-hmm.
But I went back to Manhattan after that, and you say you worked on Wall Street?
I did.
That's fascinating.
I worked for Morgan Stanley. I was a top broker, and I worked for a few other companies as well. Worked for Prudential, and
did you live in the city?
I lived in Boston, but I did a lot of my work in New York City. I had a lot of my clients were in Boston. I had some big clients in New York City. I had institutional accounts in New York City and in Boston. I managed about $80 million. I was a vice president at A.G. Edwards, and I was in the top 1% of producers.
Wow.
Banking.
I had a classmate who worked for, you said A.G. Edwards?
A.G. Edwards, yeah. I was a vice president for 5 years with that company.
There was a boy down here in the Jackson A.G. Edwards office that I went to school with at Clinton. But that is fascinating. What happened? Are you? I get the sense that maybe you're not in that line of work anymore.
Yeah, I went into to real estate. I founded a real estate company, and we work with home builders across the country, with major home builders, and I basically put together teams of people for major home builders. I scout around for. Division presidents, vice presidents of operation, vice presidents of land acquisition, vice presidents of land development, project managers, stuff like that. Basically, senior executives in the home building industry. So I shifted. I felt like I couldn't be in a. I was on Wall Street for 10 years and.
That's remarkable.
Working with Canaanites was very hard morally, because I'm a Christian, and one of my business partners was a Canaanite, and he was doing stuff that I didn't like, and so I was pretty much surrounded by Canaanites, and you know what I mean by Canaanites, right?
You're saying Jews.
Yeah, that's just another word for them.
Yeah,
but. I was just surrounded by them, and if you're around them all the time, it's not good for your soul, I don't think. So in the home building industry, it's a lot different. It's white people that love God and that are working with their hands, and that people that aren't corrupted by the system. They're good people that you want to be around, people you want to be like. If you hang out too much on Wall Street, you'll get greedy. And
that's what it's about. It's about making money.
It's all about greed, yeah.
It's all about making money. It's about making money even here in Mississippi. I mean, it's not limited to Wall Street. It seems like the whole country, it's only about money. It's not about anything other than, you know, something, I don't know, tangible, something. Whereas the intangible doesn't seem to be important at all.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I was even thinking about maybe going back to school and finishing a PhD in mathematics because I actually enjoyed academia a lot more than working in Wall Street and working in the real world and, you know, in real estate and so forth.
Where'd you go to school?
Well, I went to graduate school in England. I went to Cambridge University.
Get out of here. Good night, man. Yeah. You all decked out. Oh, boy, that's pretty good. What? And your father, when you say he was a Marine now, was he an officer, or did he serve a tour and that was it, or was he in the Marine Corps a long time?
My father, he passed away about 2 years ago, and he was actually not an officer. He was an infantry, and he was over in the Pacific, and he fought over in the Pacific, and he lost his left hand fighting against the Japanese in World War II. So, he was a war hero, and then he actually became a police officer and a captain. In a major metropolitan area in the police force. But he had his training in the Marines, and he went to school too, and he, you know, got his law degree and got a JD and so forth. And
Your father was an attorney as well?
Well, he was, in order to become a detective, he had to get his, in order to go up the ladder, he wanted to go up the ladder. In order to do that, getting his Juris Doctorate enabled him to go up the ladder quicker.
Mm-hmm.
He was a captain in the Boston Police Department. In order for him to go up to the top, he had to go to law school in order to get, you know, in order to go up the ladder, he got that JD. And, That helped him get to the top in the department, and he was, under the commissioner. That's the only person that was higher than him was the commissioner. So, going to school helped him out a lot.
Wow, I know he must have been mighty proud of you. To go over there and study. What kind of degree did you get from Cambridge? Hello. You know, this is something that happens. I don't know if it's his phone. It cuts out. Hopefully he'll call back. There's just, you know, a couple of times we've communicated, and it, all of a sudden the phone, it'll go dead. I think he's calling via, you know, some internet. Not via regular landline. But again, hopefully he will call back in. Man, that's interesting. Wall Street, and then real estate, and prior to that, Cambridge. That's mighty, mighty interesting. And again, hopefully he will call back. I don't think he hung up on me. I think there's something wrong with the telephone line. Let me go back to the steel thing real quick. Get a load of this now. Where am I at? I'm at KIVITV.com. Associated Press, June 15th, 2010. Title. SUV in bomb scare belongs to attorney Edgar Steele. Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Start. A sport utility vehicle that prompted a bomb scare in northern Idaho belongs to an attorney facing federal charges in a murder-for-hire plot. Stop. I mean, how much weirder can this case get? I mean, you got white powder coming into the freaking federal offices. Now you got a pipe bomb. I mean, Lord have mercy. I mean, they're trying to something just smells to high heaven here. You know, whether or not we get at the truth of the matter will be a real challenge. Start. Police say a worker at Fastlane Quick Lube in Coeur d'Alene spotted what appeared to be an explosive device underneath the 2004 Mitsubishi Endeavor Limited on Tuesday and called authorities. The vehicle is registered to Edgar J. Steele, who federal prosecutors have accused of hiring a hitman to try to kill his wife and mother-in-law. Steele was arrested Friday and made an initial court appearance Tuesday afternoon. Steele is well known from his work. This is him. Stop. This is Jim Giles.
Hey Jim, we got cut off. I apologize for that.
Yeah, you know it's the service that you use. It appears not to be in, or it could be. Well, I'm pretty sure it's your service. I think you said maybe you use Google Voice or something like that.
Yeah, I'm on Google Voice. I'm away from my landline right now.
Yeah, it's a glitch there.
It's a glitch.
Yeah,
right.
But
okay. I have a Skype.
Skype.
Phone.
You Skype. My Skype is Jimmy.D.Giles. G-I-L-E-S.
Okay, so that's Jimmy with two M's.
Yep. Y.
Okay.
.D.GILES. You got it? You there? Boy, he goes in a hurry.
Should I try to Skype call you?
Yeah. Skype
Jimmy
me.
Dot D. Okay, so it's Jimmy.D.Giles?
Yep, that's it. G like George, I L E S.
Okay, I'll give you a Skype call.
Okay, good deal.
I'll call you right back.
Okay.
Take care.
Yeah, there's something wrong with that Google Voice. He's it's cut off, you know, several times. And this is the party that I thought was threatening me. I mean, it was, I made such a big deal. Heck, I called the FBI up in Boston. I was so concerned about it. But he sounds like a good young man. I mean, heck. Let me see if my Skype's turned on. It's got to be. Anyway, this thing with the car bomb. I mean, Lord have mercy. How much weirder can the Ed Steele case get? Start. The vehicle is registered to Edgar J. Steele, who federal prosecutors have accused of hiring a hitman to try to kill his wife and mother-in-law. Steele was arrested Friday and made an initial court appearance Tuesday afternoon. Steele is well known from his work representing hate groups. Give me a fucking break. Fuck you. This is the associate. There he is. Hey, can you hear me? Let me see. Add to context. Come on. I'm trying to answer. Hello? Yeah, all right. Okay, Ed, all right. Yeah, okay, there he is. I ain't too swift on this Skype thing because I hadn't really done it that much. But he ought to be able to get through now. Buck?
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, that's much better. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound loud and clear. Good to talk to you, Jim.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I you know, there's a lot of people that that I know that had mentioned you, and they said, you know, check out that Radio Free Mississippi. It's a great radio show, and it's, you know, it's good for white people to listen to, and you know, I've enjoyed it. I've heard at least five or six, maybe more, and they're quite good, entertaining, and informative. Something that you're not going to get from your media in the you know, mainstream American media.
Yeah.
You're going to get something honest and not politically correct.
Yeah.
Right? So yeah. That's the way to go.
I've only heard tidbits about the Christian identity, and as I understand it, that's what you're involved with, right?
I am. I'm involved in that. As a matter of fact, a buddy of mine, a boxer, is a good friend of mine. He was wondering if he could join in. He's pretty much an expert in Christian identity.
You're saying now he wants to join
yeah.
in now? Yeah. Come
yeah.
on. Tell
is
him. Come on.
I'm
yeah.
going to bring him in.
Yeah.
Okay. And Boxer is an expert on Christian identity. I consider myself more of a Christian Israelite mm-hmm. than Christian identity.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, Boxer, this is Jim Giles on the line here.
Oh, hey, how's it going?
Hey. Nice to hear.
I was telling him we were talking about Christian identity, and I was saying that my buddy Boxer, he knows a lot more about it than I do. And do you want to tell Jim about the basics of Christian identity, maybe for the audience too out there might want to know a little bit more about Christian identity? What does it mean, and so forth?
Just kind of the basic tenets.
The basics.
Well, I think if you went away, you know, if you were out of the Christian identity seminar or something, if you went away with the fact that Jesus Christ is not a Jew and that the Jews aren't God's chosen people, that actually the white Anglo-Saxon type people are, I think you would have gotten a lot out of it. But for most Judeo-Christians, that's a bit of a leap, you know, for them. But I believe in Christian identity, so you know. So, but that's it in a nutshell. I'm oversimplifying, of course, but
one of the things that makes Christian identity unique is that we believe that that white people, Europeans, are actually the true Israelites. We are actually the people that you know, we get our name Caucasian because we come from the Caucasus Mountains, and we actually came from the Caucasus Mountains about 750 years before Christ was born, 750 BC. But that's a big coincidence, because that's the exact same time that the Israelites were in bondage in the kingdom of Assyria. During there were two major invasions that took away the Israelite people. The first one was in 750 BC. The Assyrians took away the Israelite people in the northern kingdom back to Assyria, and this was again around 750 BC. And then again, another kingdom called the Babylonian Empire, they took the Israelites. Precisely the Judahites, the people in Judah, the tribes of Benjamin, and a lot of people from the tribes of Levi, back to Babylon. And this was happening at 586 BC. But most of the people, and we're talking tens of millions of people, were taken into captivity 750 BC to Assyria. And Assyria, the capital of Assyria, is Nineveh. And Nineveh is right at the foothold of the Caucasus Mountains. So, at the, you know, right around the same time that the Israelites were in bondage to Assyria, that just happens to be about the same time, give or take 25 years, when we came from Assyria, approximately 750 BC. So if you put the pieces of the puzzle together, the white people, Celtic people, Scandinavian people, Germanic people, and so forth, we actually come from the Caucasus Mountains, but before we were in the Caucasus Mountains, we were in Israel. We are the Israelites. We are the people in the Bible that God is talking about. And the people that call themselves Jews are claiming to be Israelites, but they're not Israelites. These people claiming to be Jews, in reality, are actually what are called Canaanites. Canaanites are the kingdom that were south of Israel. And they got annexed into the kingdom of Israel around 150 B.C. 150 B.C., the Israelites conquered the southern part of Canaan, the land of Canaan, and they annexed the Edomites, what's called the Idumeans. And when they annexed these people, these Idumeans, they annexed what's called the Edomite people or the Canaanite people. And they were not blood Israelites. They were actually descendants of Edom, which is a descendant of Esau, but they were also descendants of the evil Canaanites. These Canaanites would practice all sorts of evil, stuff I don't even like to mention if this is on the air. I don't even want to mention the stuff that they would do, but all sorts of perversions like what happened in, Sodom and Gomorrah, that kind of stuff. And, abominations, perverseness, and everything that you see
sounds like America today.
Exactly, like the media and all the American corruptness today that we see in America, practiced primarily by the Jews. I mean, they pretty much are the authors of corruption. They're the authors of porn and all sorts of
depravity.
The banking scandals and all sorts of evil. This is because these people are Canaanites. I mean, what they did is they were annexed into the kingdom of Israel 150 years before Christ was born by John Hyrcanus, and then also by King.
I might mention, not to interrupt you, but that's a real watershed moment in history. Is John Hyrcanus? You know,
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, do you want to elaborate?
I'm not familiar
that?
With that. John Hyrcanus.
John Hyrcanus. John Hyrcanus is the last ruling king of the southern kingdom of Judah. When the southern kingdom of Judah, see, back in the Old Testament, the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom were at war, and they finally broke apart with Rehoboam and Jeroboam, and the northern kingdom went off into Assyrian captivity, back around 750 BC. And then the northern kingdom went off into Babylonian captivity about 150 years later, around 500 BC.
Well, I see it was the northern kingdom that went into captivity first in 750
yes.
BC, and then the southern kingdom went into captivity in 586 BC to the Babylonians.
Right. Now, the northern kingdom was scattered and dispersed and never to ever return. The southern kingdom did come back out of Babylonian captivity and reestablished the kingdom of Judah. So it's no longer Israel anymore, but it's a kingdom of Judah, right? And it lasted... It lasted for about 300 years until the Maccabean revolts break out, and then which is First and Second Mac, which are apocryphal books in Anglican and Catholic churches and Orthodox churches and stuff like that. Well. John Hyrcanus is key because he's the last ruling monarch and what he's known for is defeating the southern kingdom of Edom, which is where Idumeans or today's present day Jews come from. It's a Canaanite tribe, and he basically absorbed them and annexed them into the kingdom of Judah, which is opposed to the laws of the New Testament. It's sort of like the United States. We already have 45 million Mexicans here, so let's just go ahead and make Mexico the 51st state, kind of like that kind of action, right? You know what I mean?
And then calling the Mexicans that we annexed, calling those people Americans. So they're calling these brown people that are calling themselves Americans. In reality, we know they can never be true Americans. They're always Mexicans.
Right.
And the same thing
this
happened with these Canaanites. These Edomites came into Israel, and they automatically call themselves Israelites all of a sudden. When right, genetically right. they're not Israelites, just, they're actually
right.
they're Edomites and Canaanites. They're
good point. That's exactly what people do today. All the third world brown people of today, they come over to America, and then our media deems them Americans, gives them a passport, and just says they're American, and they pretty much think they are too. You know.
It's fascinating.
And that was
it's fascinating. Pardon? It is fascinating listening to you erudite gentlemen speak. You know, there are a lot of people down here in the South, in Mississippi where I live, but throughout the South, who are really into the religious thing. I mean, you talk about Bible thumpers, man. That's who runs the show down here. Do y'all ever have theological debates, or can you not even go there with, you know, traditional Christianity? You know, the folks who believe that Jesus was a Jew, that believe that the Jews are God's chosen people. Do y'all ever have a civil debate?
All the time. Every
day.
They're very hard to reach. As a matter of fact, my dad was a pastor in a Southern Baptist church for over 32 years. So
is he still alive? Is he still alive?
Yeah, he's still alive, right. Can't talk to him more than 5 minutes about this type of stuff without him getting mad and you know, shutting the conversation down.
I see. So he's still traditional and
absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, and most people are. Judeo-Christianity is Jesus was a Jew. Christianity is a universal message for all of mankind. Israel is God's chosen people.
I need y'all's right? help. I need y'all's help to because I have no knack at it because I can't deal with them. I mean, they won't listen to me. I mean, you can't talk with your father, but I sure as heck can't talk with the people around me because, I mean, but this religious thing, it's big, big, big. I mean, you said your father's, is he still a Southern Baptist preacher?
Yes, he's a Southern, well, he's getting up there in years now, and he's retired, and now he's an associate pastor at a bigger church, but, so he doesn't have his own church anymore.
Mm-hmm.
He's getting on up there in years, right?
Well, I used to get, and it's just because of my limited attention span, but Eli James, I used to get a bunch of emails from somebody affiliated with that. Maybe they were forwarding stuff. Are y'all familiar with him?
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm familiar with Eli.
What's up with him?
Yep. Pardon?
Can you tell me about him?
Well, to be honest, I do his website. so
you know him real well. I don't know anything about him.
I know him real well. I'm just saying I administrate his website.
Well, I appreciate that honesty. You stepped right on up and admitted it. That's kind of funny. How many Christian identity preachers are there out there?
There's probably a dozen or so that I could think of offhand. And and it's growing. It's growing, and you know, maybe not fast, but it is growing. I don't think it'll ever go mainstream. You know. If it goes mainstream, then
it's been corrupted. It's been corrupted.
It's been corrupted. Yeah.
Yeah,
because you can't. If you're 503C tax exempt religious institution in this country, you are a corrupt institution.
Yeah, but let me ask you about this. You know. World Church of the Creator, Matt Hell. What was he? What were they? Were they Christian identity?
No. They were pagans.
Okay.
And they didn't believe in Christian identity at all. They believed that Christianity was a religion invented by the Jews to.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. Yeah, there are a good many people in the racial community who think like that. Yeah.
Yeah, and to trick the goyim.
Yeah.
That's what they think. Right,
yeah.
And that's and they would have been. World Church of the Creator is just a really, it's just a pagan. There's no other way to, you know, it's a pagan, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And Matt Hale, I don't know too much about Matt Hale other than he got set up and he probably didn't deserve what he got. But he was pretty opposed to Christianity.
At the time. Another curiosity of mine would be, since y'all don't have any kind of, or do you, is there any kind of big headquarters? Because I would think the feds would be trying to target y'all the way they did Hale, you know, get an informant in there and try to sting you.
Yeah, that's how they do it all the time.
Right.
No, the answer is no. The biggest one that's out there is that guy that does Scriptures for America in Colorado. What the heck is his name? He's probably the closest one, but he's just barely Christian identity, right?
Mm-hmm. Who is the most prominent Christian identity preacher in the country?
Right now?
Yep.
Arthur Murray? Well,
probably Arnold Murray is just barely Christian identity. Shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
But you could throw him into that category, I would think.
Well, you know, I appreciate y'all's interest in my broadcast, and I would like to give y'all a lot more time in the future to discuss this, because while I'm not super, I'm not into that right now big time, I'm surrounded and swamped and engulfed with people who cannot breathe without all I can say is Christian fundamentalist. Like I told somebody the other day, I could stick my head out my door and yell loud, and there would be a lot of Christian fundamentalists who would hear me. I mean, they're everywhere.
Oh, I know. Well, I'm assuming you live in the South, right?
Just outside of Jackson, Mississippi.
Okay, and yeah, I live in the South too. I live in Austin, Texas, so I'm pretty familiar. I know what you're talking about. But, you know, Judeo-Christianity or evangelical fundamentalism or dispensational or Zionist Christianity, whatever you want to label it, is pretty corrupt. It is pretty corrupt, and they have some pretty... pretty outlandish beliefs, like the Jews are God's chosen people. We can just kick back and let the good Lord handle it because we're all getting raptured and getting out of here, so we don't have to deal with it. I mean, it's a pretty corrupted form of Christianity, in my opinion. Right now,
I agree wholeheartedly, and I describe them more harshly than you do. I have contempt for them.
Right. Well, and happening is that a lot of people who are, you know, in my opinion, white nationalist minded or whatever you want to call it, end up throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah, I've definitely done that. So that's why I'm interested in you guys to scoop up these idiots around me. Maybe y'all can do something with them. I can't. But I'm...
Yeah. Oh, they're tough nut to crack. Now, I think I can tell when they're going to crack and when they're not. Like, for example, Buck has a couple guests that come in when he does his... He does a little Skype conference and stuff, and he's got a few that I can think off of that they'll never come around. I can tell they won't.
What I would like to do is to try to go for some of these mainstream preachers. I mean, they're supposed to be in the business of you know, retrieving
shepherding.
Lost. Yeah, shepherding, right? And bringing, you know, the lost into the fold and whatnot. And to the extent they went to seminary and have a brain and they want to defend their theological position, I would just simply love to have an exchange, a civil exchange, with the Christian identity community and all these mainstream Christian fundamentalists down here. I mean, that would be fun.
Right. Well, Yeah, I mean, I could never sit in, well, just like my dad, he's gone off to Dallas Theological Seminary, which has arguably had probably the most influence on Protestant denominations, you know, here in North America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with the names like, you know, Chuck Swindoll I'm sure you've heard of, you know, names like that, you know,
the Dallas Seminary, the Dallas Seminary I have heard of. I'm not familiar with that Chuck Swindoll, but, our preachers over here, they all go to seminary and they, you know, a friend of mine who's a beekeeper friend, he was telling me the story about some preacher who came into the church. This is kind of a rural church, and you know their annual budget was like $8,000. And when he died recently, it had grown to like $100,000. But very soon after he became preacher, he emphasized how important tithing was. And the next mm-hmm. thing my friend saw him, he was in a new recreational vehicle. So, you know, this money, this money thing with these preachers is really big. You know, Hagee being the best example.
Well, it's a tax exempt institution, and it's long dispensational theology. You will retain your tax exempt status just like when they passed the hate crimes laws, where they outlaw. Preaching against homosexuality in church, you watch and see the church, which still thinks that homosexuality is wrong in neoconservative circles here in this country, will eventually slowly adopt that. And why will they adopt it? Because they will lose their tax-exempt status if they do not.
Yep, maybe that's why my congressional campaigns never went anywhere. I was advocating doing away with all tax exempt status for all churches, doing away with the 501c3 organizations, period.
Yeah, well, you would have a lot of people come out against you, all those types come out against you, all of conservative, neocon, Judeo-Christian types would come out against you and basically hate you more than a liberal. Don't you think?
Well, you know, they pretty much ignore me now, but and they did back then as well. What's a sermon like, or what's a service like at a Christian, at Eli James? Do y'all go to church on Sunday?
Well, no, you can't have a church building for a Christian identity. It's not really a have a church building per se kind of movement, because they always get shut down.
Who gets shut down?
So, well, now, anything Christian identity. If you do Christian identity, you're going to have to do a Bible study in your house and do it on the internet. That's how you're going to have to do it, and that's how the community operates right now.
Okay, and why can't a church now? What happens as far as getting shut out?
Well, if you get a church building and you have attendees give you money and you're building, then you're a tax exempt. You have tax-exempt status. Once the ADL, or Southern Poverty Law Center, identifies you as a hate group, you're going to have every single financial, you know, tax-exempt budget, you know, yanked out from under you, you know?
But
so there aren't any. So they basically give up in that area. You know what I mean?
No, this is new. You know it well. I know it. This is the first time I'm hearing what's happening here. The first thing, I understood you to say you're against 501c3, but would y'all accept it if you could get it just to enjoy that benefit, but they won't give it to you?
Yeah, they won't give it to you. Yeah, you'll have it revoked. You'll have it revoked. If you're a 503c tax-exempt, you know, religious institution, then you're not teaching the gospel in this country.
Did that happen with Eli James? Did he set up a church, and was he shut out?
Yeah, I mean, others have tried it in the past. You know, they and they get shut down. You know, I mean, didn't Aryan Nations used to be a religious institution, so to speak? Soda, you know, weren't they doing? And then they got. Wasn't there a guy named Pastor Butler, and he basically got shut down, didn't he?
Yeah, in Idaho.
Yeah. Maybe he's not a good example, but you know, he's one.
Boy, Idaho's a hot state right now, man. I tell you. And I thought it was kind of dull out there, but it seems to be a lot happening at Idaho. Do y'all following that Edgar Steele case out there?
I just heard about that. Apparently he's in jail now for trying to kill his wife or something.
A murder plot for murder for hire plot. And there's all kind of stuff going on around it. There's white powder being sent into the federal buildings out there. And they found a pipe bomb under his SUV. Now I'm reading just before I started talking with Buck. Just remarkable.
Oh, I don't doubt there. If J. Edgar said he's had people try to kill him, I wouldn't doubt that at all. Not one bit. For what? I mean, he was basically the attorney for Aryan Nations, wasn't he?
No. He's accused of plotting to try to kill his wife, paying someone else to kill his wife.
No. He was the attorney for Aryan Nations back when they were going through their trial.
Right. But I'm speaking about the charges he's facing now.
Yeah, they trumped up. I don't know anything about it, but I would be inclined to think that those charges are trumped up just right off the bat, right?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely a consideration. Getting at the truth of the matter, though, I mean, it's the point I was making, though, on top of the charge, there are ancillary things now popping up left and right that it's making it look like a circus out there. In Idaho, I mean, they've got white powder being sent in to the federal buildings, and they've got, just a minute ago, I was reading, they found an SUV, I believe, that was owned by Edgar Steele that had a pipe bomb under it. I mean, that's too weird. Sounds real suspicious. I mean, this is, it sounds over the top to me, and it sounds like, you know, somebody's, you know, maybe it just sounds weirder. You know, it's really strange. Be interesting.
I just can't imagine that, you know. I just can't imagine that, listening to the guy. I mean, like I said, I don't know him personally. I've listened to some of his line before, you know, and Nickel Rants and stuff.
Right.
But I would say I could probably find out. I know people that did know him, you know, but I would just be inclined to believe that because of his political views, that I'd be highly suspect of it.
Yeah, of course. Right. Yeah, of course. You would think they targeted him. This is manufactured. That's a possibility, clearly. If not a probability, it's certainly a possibility. But back to Christian Identity. So y'all meet in homes and Buck, you were saying this thing about conferencing now. What you were trying to get me involved in some kind of conference. What are you referring to there?
Well, we have a conference and we discuss a lot of different issues. Christian Identity comes up quite a bit. But, you know, basically just a group of a lot of, you know, patriot type of people and, you know, Christians. And, you know, we get to talk about, you know, what's going on. You know, in a forum where we don't have to worry, hopefully, that, you know, the feds are listening in.
I assume every time I speak here that the feds are listening in. I just assume that. That's a given. I don't really care. I try to stick it to them when I think about them. So I don't really care.
Yeah,
right. I don't care.
I'm assuming that you've been pretty politically active down in your state.
Yeah.
You know, so you've probably, I mean, you've experienced, you know, the enemies that be, right?
Yeah, big time. big time.
And they do play dirty pool, don't they?
Big time, yeah. That's why I fully understand what's being done to Steele may be all manufactured. That's definitely a possibility.
Right.
But just,
I don't know. I wasn't there, but I would be inclined. I would be inclined just the fact because of who he is that it's a trumped up charge. All you got to do to destroy somebody in politics is charge him with child molestation, and their career is ruined. It's ruined, you know? It's ruined. It's a shambles. It doesn't take much.
They did that to Pastor Lindstedt, I believe. They accused him of child molestation, and I'm pretty sure that he didn't do it. He's innocent, and you know, they screwed him up and tried to ruin his life, and he's innocent, and you know, I think he was found you know, not guilty ultimately, but once somebody accuses you of something like that, you know, it's always going to stick with that person, even if they're innocent.
Even if they're innocent and the charges didn't stick, you're still ruined.
Yeah, another name that I was going to raise with y'all. Now, see, he's been out there kind of doing some stuff that I can't quite get a feel for Pastor Lindstedt. I had a friend who mentioned the fact that the charges against him most probably were trumped up, but there was something else. I forget. But is he? Does he rant and rave? I mean, what's the? I'm confused when it comes to Martin Lindstedt, to be totally honest with you. I think he got mad at me for a while. Somebody wanted me to interview him, and that never happened. But isn't he in Missouri?
Yeah, he's from Southwest Missouri. He had I actually heard one of your shows on his talk show. He's a talk show, and he actually had one of your shows in his listings. So
yeah.
You know, it was complimentary to
yeah.
you.
I kind of got the sense he got mad at me because I wouldn't interview him. But,
okay.
You know, and something, I quite honestly, I was talking at the time with Alex Linder, and he didn't have positive things to say about him, and so he kind of planted a negative bug in my ear about him. And I like Alex, but, you know, the thing about this racial stuff, heck, everybody's fights with one another. Hey, nobody gets along.
They do. They do. There's a lot of infighting. Right?
Yeah, big time. Big time.
Yeah. There is a lot of infighting. And as a matter of fact, so much that I can't tell you. I've had friends that, you know, they just get tired of it, you
yeah.
know.
Well,
get tired of all infighting.
Nobody, it's really, you know, I kind of refer to that crowd kind of as the white money movement. I make a point to... Anyway, my simple program is to try to get people to run for their state house, and otherwise it's water torture. I consider the world we live in, you know, the country we live in, just water torture. You can holler all you want, but the real force, the real legal force, is in becoming a representative in a legislative body. Now, I know some people out there in the racial community say, well, that'll never happen, and they're kind of waiting for a hot war. But,
right.
I don't know. It's a mess.
I've always advocated the answer is not at the federal government. It's thoroughly corrupt. You have to be a Democrat or a Republican, or you're not going to win, period. And you're not going to be a Democrat or Republican unless you've been... You've thoroughly run the corruption gauntlet, right?
Well, so what do you think about Buck's his avatar there says Christian Republican?
Yeah, I mean, I am a Christian Republican. That is true.
Buck is basically back. You know, Republicans were conservative, mostly Christian white people, church-going white people. Well, the Republicans, they don't represent that anymore. They don't represent that. I mean, I hope I'm not offending anybody, but, it'll be the first time I've offended somebody.
Yeah, I offend them regular here, so they're pretty thick-skinned. They keep listening. It don't bother them.
But, you know... It's, you know, that they harken back into the time. It's just like, the up north where you have these Christians that are diehard Democrats. Well, they keep voting their blue dog Democrats, whatever you want to call them. They keep voting Democrats when the Democratic Party does nothing to represent their interests. Absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, it does everything in its power to oppose everything you stand for. Anything Christian, anything, I'm still stuck back in the age, like back at the turn of the 20th century during the Industrial Revolution age, you know? They're like stuck back there or something, you know? What are you going to do about that?
Let me ask you
about... I would say Buck is just kind of clings on to that Reagan era. Wouldn't you say, Buck? That's what
I
say.
Yeah, I mean, I do. I am still influenced by the, you know, upbringing that I was brought up with. And, you know, I'm proud of my upbringing. And, I grew up, I was a real young kid when Ronald Reagan came into power. But I saw such a difference. I was only in elementary school. And I remember even when it went from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. And I just remember what a wonderful sense of liberation we had when we went from Jimmy Carter to Ronald Reagan. We went from being the wussies of the world with Jimmy Carter giving away the Panama Canal and not being able to get back the hostages in Iran and all that, and we were a disgrace to the world. I mean, we were a cowardly country as far as I'm concerned. And then Ronald Reagan came in and he took over. And he made America great again for the first time in a long time. And, I was only a small kid in grade school, but I remember that. And I remember, feeling proud to be an American back then. I went from being, ashamed of this Jimmy Carter guy, and then Ronald Reagan came in. I mean, I was all but probably, 8, 9, 10 years old, and I'm like, this guy's great. You know, he represents, what America should be. And, you know, maybe you could say maybe I am brainwashed a little bit about that, but I just remember how proud I was of America and to be an American, under that administration.
But Reagan, he granted amnesty to a lot of illegals too.
I mean, I was also to be honest with you, I was a really big George W. Bush fan and Herbert Walker Bush fan. And
I remember that when I first met you, you were pretty keen on George Bush, which was typical for the country. I think those are the kind of people that you go by Jim or James or
pretty much Jim. Close old friends call me Jimmy, but typically Jim.
Okay. or Radio Free Mississippi.
Yeah.
Okay, but, they're the same kind of people that you've probably been beating your head up against. They're typically conservative in their values. They're typically, white. They're typically, Judeo, what they've called Judeo-Christian values, Of course, that's a misnomer right there, just that freaking name,
Yep.
Judeo-Christian values. That's like saying I'm a satanic Christian,
That's a new...
I'm a satanic Christian.
It's a relatively new term, too. It is.
It didn't come along till like the 70s.
Right.
After, and if you'll notice, that's when all the modern English Bibles came out, and they corrupted all that.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you there. Yeah. But I'm with Buck, too, in regard to having been caught up with the Reagan enthusiasm and the stark contrast between Reagan... and Carter. I was very disillusioned once I became racial and people pointed out to me how
much hypocrisy is out there, right?
How the substance it was lacking. That the foreign war,
yes.
the ultimate threats were the profound fundamental threats Reagan could not and would not address. He looked good by comparison because he didn't let, he stuck it to Gaddafi. I remember that he went after Gaddafi in Libya. And I was living in Paris at the time, actually. And the French government made the squadron in England that flew on that bombing run fly around France. They wouldn't allow them to go through French airspace. And I remember the getting mad at the Parisians that I was having active political discussions with at the time about that, and they considered America cowboys and roughshodding other people. And I was very proud of Reagan. I was proud to be, like Buck said, I was proud to be an American again. As I evolved, I've come to recognize and resent any kind of foreign intervention we exert. Hell, we've got so many damn problems right here in America that we ought not be in any. You know, I'd bring all our troops home, and I don't care.
Of course,
all these guys that are big into war and killing people.
Put them on the border.
Right. Exactly.
And when the Mexicans come over the border, shoot them.
Right.
I mean, that's what they should do.
Yeah.
They have no business being here in this country.
So
the Mexicans. I mean, the reason why we're over there is because we're fighting the Jews' war for them.
Right.
That's what we're doing over there. We should take all those troops and put them on the border of our own country with Mexico and America, and even on the northern side with Canada and America. I mean, there's all sorts of people coming over from Asia into Canada, and they'll probably come down here too. And then we have a bunch of not only Mexicans but Guatemalans and Central Americans coming up through there as well. And we need to secure our own border. And we don't need men in Afghanistan and Iraq and all that. We need people. We need these men on our border, protecting our border.
I think,
as far as I'm concerned,
I'm gonna title this broadcast "Christian Identity." Part one. This is the first time. This is the most lengthy discussion I've had yet thus far, and we really hadn't gotten into too much. We're kind of scratching the surface, but that's good. I've heard about Christian identity for a good long while. There are just a zillion questions that I'm curious. Now, what are y'all? How political? Obviously, y'all are quite political, as is the Baptist Church. They just, but what's y'all's? I mean, are y'all praying down there? Obviously, you're very energetic. You two gentlemen are. But what about the other Christian identity people? What's y'all's game plan? What's y'all's strategy?
Well, there is no political game plan, I'd say, for Christian identity. It's just strictly evangelical, spiritual type of a movement. They don't have any, not everybody that adheres to is there. A lot of people, I guess, a lot of there are some people in CI who don't think there's a solution for our situation, right? You know what I mean?
No,
I don't think there is.
No, I do know what you mean, but just carry on. Tell us more. This is interesting.
Oh, okay. Now, some of them do think that there's a political solution. Some people get involved with Christian identity because maybe it appeals to their white nationalist politic bend, and they see it as an avenue to who knows what, and certainly there are people in there that are a little eccentric, maybe. But you have that in mainstream Christianity too. I can guarantee I can go to any church and find weird people, right?
No doubt, yeah. No doubt.
And it's I would say it's picking up. I would say because it picked up a lot of steam, but they're spread out literally all over the world. Let's see, Eli, Will Fink do a show, and they team up, and they get a few people, but it's very much an underground type of a following. As far as I'm concerned, I think they get, though I don't agree with every single thing, and there are some differences. Some of the people in CI do disagree on some theological points. And we've had arguments about that before in some of Buck's rooms. And it's beyond the scope of what we're talking about, but there are some differences. Certainly, there's no question about that. But I would say, in a nutshell, the differences kind of go like this. There's CI, Christian Identity, which is basically comes from British Israelism. I'm sure you've heard of that term before, right?
No, I've never heard of that term. What is that? What does that mean?
Well, British Israelism, you can look that up, like on, and it started over in England probably around the, probably around the 1700s, somewhere around there, late 1700s. And so Christian identity has its roots in that direction. Now, there's two schisms in Christian identity. One of them is the British Israelism, and the other one is the American version. And the American version, in my opinion, is the one that's probably more mature and more correct and has kind of been more vigilant with seeking the scriptures out, whereas the British one kind of development stage back in the late 1800s and never really grew after that. It never really grew its theology and its stand. The difference being that British Israelism basically believes that the northern tribes of Israel are white people, Caucasians, but the southern tribe are Jews, what we today know as Jews. American Israelism would say, no, all of Israel was white, and what we know today as Jews are Canaanite, Edomite, you know, Moabite, Hittite, et cetera, Canaanite tribes, right? You know what I mean? Which, in my opinion, is the correct view. So as you can imagine, because of that, there's a schism along how they interpret their history to the Bible. That's probably a major difference right there, I would say. Do you know what I mean?
Not precisely, but I get a sense of, I mean, this is one thing that at 51 years of age is a turnoff to me about religion. When you start talking about ancient things that are way historical, the transfer of not this fact and this assertion and this theory, you know, it's kind of like archaeology in a way. I trust archaeology much more, even though I'm skeptical about it. In terms of validating why you believe what you believe is based on what now, and then you get back into all this jargon, and then the people that live around me, heck, it's a matter of faith. It's everybody's been doing it for a good long while, and that's what the preacher said, and you know, we got it. You got to do what the crowd's doing. And see, the thing, I just wonder how the Christian identity creates a fundamental philosophical basis like the seminary in Dallas. So you're right at the bedrock now when you're talking about all this stuff. But has anybody documented? And I mean, does Christian identity aspire to have a seminary for, you know, Christian identity preachers, for example, to kind of lay out your framework and why you think the way you do, and this is what happened then, and that's why that happened? And I mean, one curiosity I would have: what's Christian identity's view of the Old Testament?
Well, the Old Testament is an essential part of the Bible. Even Jesus said, "Hey, I haven't come to abolish the law. Not one jot, not one tittle will pass." Right? And what is the law? Well, that's the those are the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Bible, are the law. You know,
I was on the Mossad's website yesterday, and I think I read today where. So anyway, their motto or something, it's a chapter out of the Old Testament. Something within counsel, there's success or something like that. They use the Old Testament. But I mean, how about
who the Muslims do?
No, Mossad.
Oh, Mossad.
They also believe in the Talmud.
No. Their governing book is the Talmud. Now, there are Jewish sects out there that have the they tote around a Bible and they call it the Tanakh. Tanakh, yes, yeah. Thank you. My man. My small cylinders tonight. Tanakh, but that is just really just a cover piece, really. If you really got down to the nuts and bolts of what the religion was about, it's Talmudic, and the rabbis give the authority, but they only wave around the Torah and the Tanakh in order to pose as the scriptural biblical heirs to the Old Testament. It's just it's a posture, a position. It really has no substance, you know?
In the Talmud claims that Jesus Christ, our Savior, is burning in hell in a cauldron of slime, basically. I won't even tell you what's really in there, but basically these Talmudic Jews believe that Jesus Christ is in hell. That's how much reverence they have for the Son of God, the Son of our Heavenly Father.
Yeah, and most people, you know, don't even have a copy of the Talmud. It's very hard to get your handful where you go to a hotel, and in every hotel there's a Gideon Bible, and they just can't wait to share it with
you.
I'm
a Gideon, by the way, Foster. I don't know if you knew that, but I'm a lifelong member of the Gideons, and I think we're doing good work putting the King James Version Bible into every hotel room.
Yeah, yeah. You'd be hard pressed to find them there today, but there was a time when that was true. Right?
Back to the Old Testament. You said something about twit and twaddle. What was that chapter now?
Twit and twaddle.
Every jot and twaddle, or something like that.
Oh, every jot and tittle. Yeah, that says. Well, Jesus says that in the New Testament.
What did he say again?
He says, "It says, I have the. Do not think that I've come to abolish the law." Not one jot, not one tittle will pass before I have come.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So he's basically, I could probably find it, if I got my Bible in class, because I could probably, I have to wear glasses now. It sucks.
Yeah, big time. But what about this Jonah in the belly of the whale, and God creating the earth in 6 days. I mean, and all the other. I mean, that was always an issue, even with the Christian fundamentalists down here. There are different views on, you know, was that allegory?
Well,
or?
the Christian fundamentalist view is basically, I could probably piss more Christian fundamentalists off with the Book of Genesis than I can with any other book. Because basically their view is that there's Adam and Eve, and Adam and Eve and Eve sinned and ate of an apple off a tree, you know, basically, that they were told not to. So they were kicked out of the garden, and when they were kicked out of the garden, all the descendants on the face of the planet are essentially descendants of Adam and Eve. Or if you want to get even more technical, they're descendants of Noah, right? Noah and his three sons, right? Shem, Japheth, and
Ham.
Ham. God, man, thank you. And so basically what they're saying, and you know. And they also, and you ask questions like, well, you ask your pastor, you go, well, if Cain killed Abel, and then Cain was punished and thrown out, you know, it says here a few verses later that he took a wife. Where did his wife come from? Well, the Judeo-Christians would tell you, well, obviously, you know, Adam and Eve had more children and, you know, that kind of stuff. It's just silly fairy tales that they tell, right?
Well, listen,
in my opinion,
you know, I have thoroughly enjoyed this. I was going to ramble, as I often do here, by myself. So I'm glad, Buck, you called in. What I'd like to do is to get y'all on with one of your preachers, whether it's if you can get Pastor James or Pastor Martin Lindstedt on here, or any of the other Christian identity, I'd like to pursue this and just fully understand what y'all are about, and let y'all take a crack at these Christian fundamentalists down here where I live.
Sure, that'd be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, we do. I mean, it'd be a lot of fun. Sure. But you know, some of them have a pretty harsh reaction. Don't be surprised if they drop a lot of F-bombs on your head before you're done with them.
Oh, you mean they curse?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Lord, have mercy. You must not have been... Hey, I promise.
I'm just saying, they'll come in all, you know, prim, proper Christian and how much they love Jesus, and then pretty soon they're ravaging, foaming at the mouth, animals dropping F-bombs all over your head. Right?
Yeah, well... I'm
Pastor Eli. Pastor Eli's pretty. He's got a clean mouth. I mean, it's important to me as a Christian to have a clean mouth. I know that, you know, but I don't judge other people when they swear. But Pastor Eli, he's got a clean mouth. He doesn't swear too much.
Yeah. Well, having said that, though, you can't get up in front. I mean, think about it. Would you go to a church where you got up and the pastor was dropping F bombs on the congregation? Come on.
Yeah.
Come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean,
wouldn't do that.
I wouldn't do that. I know. I mean, and there are pastors that do that. When they do that, I don't particularly like it when they do that. That's something that
I mean, how long would you have your church? How long would you be a preacher? How long would you have a congregation? Probably not very long.
There's an issue though in terms of a you know, if you're going to lead I've always been told by my betters, you go after a hardcore nucleus first, and so you're not really. But even, I mean, it's even tough to get a hardcore nucleus out there because they're so, you know, caught up with what's going on out there. So, I simply want to pursue this with y'all in the evening, you know, maybe, you know, 8, 9-ish, if that's okay. And let's try to hook up again tomorrow evening.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
All right.
And,
fair enough. But, you know, maybe you could shed some light on maybe some state and local politics or something sometime.
Yeah, I can tell you how to lose. Get out there and tell them you're pro-white and anti-Zionist. See, I don't want to offend Buck because he doesn't like the he likes a clean, and I respect people who use a clean mouth. Buck sounds like a dang scholar, doesn't he? Boxer.
He is a scholar. He's a freaking cage grad.
Yeah, you can't beat that with a stick.
You gotta hear him go off on freaking mathematics and freaking stuff like that.
Yeah, I want to have a conversation with him about Wall Street here later on, but I'm glad to have made y'all's company. And if it don't work out tomorrow evening for whatever reason, because I got a lot going on here at my end, I'm tickled that I know who y'all are now, and let's just try to hook up in the evening. Just, you know, I'm big into practice. I just believe in keep going at it. You know, just keep going at it.
Yeah, I'm going to add you to my friends list there, and that will have you on there. There's a lot to learn out there, and we live in an ever-rapidly changing world because the mainstream media is losing viewers lickety-split left and right and center. I mean, they are freaking losing. Who's getting them? It's the bloggers, the people out on the Internet, and it is just... They're running scared right now. They're running scared.
Well,
let me tell you, Alex Jones, which is essentially an internet show, podcast show, has more listeners than who's that Yahoo on CNBC, Matthews?
Chris Matthews.
Chris Matthews. Who listens to that old decrepit old, you know?
I don't listen to any of them.
Who listens to that? Nobody does.
Right.
Nobody, that's the point. They're losing viewership left, right, and center. Nobody listens to goons like that.
And the people they do listen to, like people like Lou Dobbs, all of a sudden, 24 hours later, they're gone, and nobody ever hears from them again. Like they get a magic check or something, and they disappear. And he was saying a lot of good stuff. I mean, Lou Dobbs was, pretty much a mirror to what I believe in. And they don't stick around because the powers that be don't want them around.
I just got an email from an erudite source. Y'all might enjoy it. The subject line is "Jews not heirs of the Bible?" In a way, the guest who said that the Jews are posing as the heirs of the Old Testament is right, insofar as the Old Testament is a collection of stories from various sources. It's part pastiche, part fiction. The historical Solomon was an Arabian king. Egyptian records do not reflect any mass exodus of Jews, and they kept meticulous records. Archaeology indicates that there was no significant settlement on the site of Jerusalem before the 6th century B.C.
Okay, what is he trying to say that Solomon was an Arab? I'm not quite sure what he's driving at.
I'm not either. I just threw it at you, theological boys there, so you could figure
well,
it out.
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like I would say, in my opinion, is that Solomon, King Solomon, obviously was an Israelite. So all Israelites are white. Not all white people are necessarily Israelites, because the covenant comes down through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Right? That's where the covenant line comes through. Now, basically, but all of the Israelites would have been white people, and the Canaanites would have been. I mean, they're the enmity that goes all the way back to Genesis. I mean, think about this: the story of Jacob and Esau. God said that Jacob I loved and Esau I hated. Well, Jacob basically stole and swindled the birthright out from Esau, but God hated Esau. Why did God hate Esau? Well, was it because? I mean, well, it was because he married two Canaanite Hittite wives. He miscegenated. Jacob didn't. All right, that's the difference. It's not they're not quibbling over a bowl of porridge. They're quibbling over the fact that he married two Canaanite Hittite women, which is essentially he is the patriarch of the nation of Edom. Right.
Okay. Let
patriarch.
Got some incoming criticism, boys. Pretty harsh, you know. There's a harsh crowd out there. Subject is what the hell? ? Start. These idiots are the white equivalent of the black Hebrew Israelites. This is bullshit.
Oh, well, I mean, it's certainly. I mean, I've heard that too. The black Hebrew stuff and stuff like that. But the difference is that you really can back your history. You really can back your history up. We know that Western history starts in basically the ancient Mesopotamian area, and it moves it moves progressively westward. Okay, now a bunch of sub-Saharan Africans that are down below the equator and below the Saharan Desert, you're not going to have any Africans. I mean, the only possible Africans you possibly could have had in antiquity, back in ancient civilization, would have been the Nubians that the Egyptians came into contact up through the Nile, up through the southern part of the Nile River. That's the only possible way. There's no way you could have had black Africans anywhere in and around Palestine or Canaan back in that day. It's just not possible. You have to go back and make your history come into agreement with the Bible. It has to do it. Just
See,
because there's some other people out there who claim identity. You got to remember, Jews have been claiming this identity for over 2,000 years. Over 2,000 years.
I'm glad I'm not in the fight now, but this emailer, he's mad at y'all. Let me just read. He shot in another email. He said, subject, Israelites are white. Yeah, bullshit. This is nonsense snake oil that our people were fed on the plane as we conquered these lands. It's fucking bullshit, Jimmy! !
Okay, well, I mean, okay. So you're just gonna say BS, BS, and do you want to engage me with why you think that's BS? I mean, do you know what happened back in antiquity? Were you there? Have you done any study in the area? Or it's just bullcrap? That's it. It's just bullcrap. I mean, that's it? That's the best you can do?
Yep, that's a good response. Emailer, you're welcome. I'm pretty tired. I ain't got much left in me, but I can hold out here just a little bit longer. If you want to call in or Skype in, you're welcome to do so. If you'll, you know, keep it civil. We don't want any, you know, I mean, you can mix it up, but just, you know. And my telephone number, it's 601-939-2950. My Skype is Jimmy, J-I-M-M-Y, dot D, dot Giles, dot G-I, or rather, simply G-I-L-E-S. So, good point, good response.
Well, I mean, history, people have dedicated their lives and have careers studying the Western tradition, which goes all the way back to antiquity.
Blacks, not to be equal to them, but they're pushing the blacks and the Spics and anything but a white, and even the white, the Wigger, liberal Wiggers over the conservative racial whites. So basically, it's not just about white supremacy. The white people can't even preserve their racial purity or their heritage because basically, like I said, the Jews worldwide are trying to destroy all the pure genetics.
Okay. Well, I'm looking at the chat room here. Harold Covington went ahead and pointed out he believes that essentially because, you know, essentially they're trying to go ahead and now the Jews have gone ahead and swung for old Mittens as opposed to Obongo. And they are not crazy about Obongo because he's a nigger. You know, he's an uppity nigger. He's a Muslim uppity faggot nigger. And essentially, he's not going to go ahead and give them the war with Iran that they want. And that might very well be the case.
They don't like Obongo. That's the main reason because he didn't start a war with Iran. Because
he doesn't want to start a war with Iran. I mean, I think Joe Biden should have simply said, you know, he did go ahead and point out is that, look, these sanctions that you didn't like had to go ahead and be passed through the U.N. They had to go ahead and essentially you had to have Russia and China go ahead and agree not to veto them. Essentially, you would not have got any sanctions if you were as tough as you want to be. Second of all, you got to understand the Iranians don't believe that they have to go ahead and obey the Jew or obey Zog or do anything like that. I mean, essentially, you got to go ahead and either go with some sanctions or no sanctions. And pretty well the question was is that, you know, what is more dangerous, whether or not Iran gets a few nuclear weapons? I believe that Iran does have nuclear weapons myself. I believe that would have been...
Okay, here's the thing. How come all these other countries can have nukes, but if Iran gets one or two, because basically India, Pakistan, and of course Italy has probably way more than what they claim they have. Okay, now here's the thing: America used to have over 5,000 nukes. We used to have more than Russia and all the other countries put together, but because the damn Jews basically started disarming America, dismantling our nukes. China and Russia did not dismantle their nukes.
Oh, they had. Right? Well, no, they did have a bunch of nukes. Well, I mean, I was in a nuclear missile, you know, unit here. You know,
they didn't get rid of some of their old shit. They sold it off, but they've updated it. I mean, Russia.
Well, they're talking about. Logan, they're talking about updating these dial-in nukes, and they're talking about costing $15, $20 billion. They're talking about costing quite a bit. The fact of the matter is that once you go ahead and you start launching nuclear weapons here, that radiation will go everywhere. It'll go ahead and go a number of places, and what happens is that Russia and China, they have nuclear weapons, and so do the Pakistanis, and so does everyone else. And increasingly, what you're doing is that you're going ahead and forcing Iran to simply say, yes, we already have nuclear weapons. We went ahead and stole a bunch of them from the Russians. I mean, fuck off. I mean, why are you making a big deal about Iran having one or two nuclear weapons when essentially you've given, what, you know, a couple hundred of them?
You know,
to the Jews in Iran, in Israel.
Okay, maybe Iran is wanting to get the weapons to prevent the damn Jews and Zog from invading their asses to their oil taking over and sitting at the Central Bank.
Well, like they did, basically, like they did against this Democrat elected socialist, a Mogadishu or whatever the hell, back in the 1950s, and they went ahead and put a fruit peddler in